Let's not waste any good content.
Quality content right here.
We are the internet's content equivalent of a tea bag. Just what? A little scraps off the floor, scraped up and put into a bag for the consumption of the masses.
Bad. Makes me feel bad.
No, I think we're a little bit better than that. At least, I mean, if we're a tea bag, it's not like we're Lipton, you know?
Oh, thank f***ing God, I would have
We're like, quit. I'd say maybe we're not quite as good as Twinings, but we definitely don't have as much mass market appeal as Twinings, I can tell you that much. But, but we're surely something.
We are a thing.
Yes. How are you feeling?
Okay, let's go.
I'm already going.
Oh!
We forgot to clap, didn't we? And I'm just
That's
talking.
That's why I thought we weren't going
My
yet.
My goodness. Mark.
G-Money. I was going to say, we should start because like it sounds like we're like talking about things that you would put on. Little did I know, you already started.
We could clap at the very end and I'd still be able to synchronize it.
Well, yeah, but would we remember to clap at the very end? The one time we do it?
Probably not.
Yeah, see?
Well, I'm glad that someone's paying attention.
Oh my gosh, these... What? Okay, my life just changed, and I don't know how to describe this. So, okay, I got a window, like, right off to my, like, 11 o'clock here.
Uh-huh.
And so, there's the, like, what are the, like, pulley string things? To like make the blinds go up and down? What's that called?
I don't even know what I call those.
Okay, yeah, okay. So I feel less weird for not knowing what to call them. But so like there's two of them, you know, like one for each side, and so like if you that way you can like adjust like if it's not pulling even or whatever. And so this one it's got like most of them have like a little plastic thing on the end of them, you know, to be a little bit of some mass or like a hangy ding-a-ling at the bottom. Of the strings, you know? And these ones, they're both like a trapezoid shaped.
Weird.
And they don't have a bottom. And I was like, this is a weird shape. These are weird. And then I was like, there's these also like little like plastic tabs. And then I go and hold them up next to each other. The tabs line up. They connect into a complete hexagon. And like connect the two strings, so if you have them tied right, so they're even, you can just connect it into one unit. I'm describing this poorly, but it just changed my life.
So you're trying to say that you had blinds that up until now you believed only ever worked completely independently, but you now realize that they can be connected in some way, so that you only have to deal with one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's a neat design. Like, it's designed so, like, you can easily just, like, have them separate.
Sure.
And that's just how I've always lived my life here. Just, like, believing that was the only way. But then I also thought, like, these are a stupidly designed, like, little tass or, like, little hanging thing. Like, why are they shaped like this? It looks stupid.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, the second it goes together into, like, this little hexagonal prism, like... It like all connects, it makes sense, and like they chose a great shape for it.
Cool. That's interesting.
It's just satisfying.
Nice. So I will let you know, I did just do a quick little search online. According to blindsmax.com, their tagline is "Where blinds come from." The things on which you pull or twist or whatever are considered the controls.
Okay.
And the part that you pull to lift up and down is called the lift cord. And my favorite is the thing on traditional slatted blinds that you twist to make them open or close. That's called the tilt wand.
The tilt wand.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny. I like that.
So there you go. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
I don't think my apartment has such nice features, but it is nice that we have in our living room, our main window is sort of double or triple wide, I would consider it. Mm-hmm. Like, compared to the window that I'm looking at right now in my bedroom, the window in the living room is, like, 3 or 4 times as wide, I would say. And that entire window has a single length of slatted blinds that you control.
Mm.
Which one could argue is not actually ideal. You know, you could consider that having multiple may actually be better for certain situations, depending on how much fine control you want of the light entering your apartment or whatever, but for us, it's been totally fine as is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Nice. Are you a curtains guy?
What does that mean?
Like, do you like having... Our apartment just has slatted blinds, right?
Yeah.
Erin, in her old apartment, the default thing was almost... It was one of the, like, roll-down... Not curtain, but you know what I mean. It was like a single sheet of fabric that you could like pull to like that basically rolled down, and they are more or less blackout curtains for all intents and purposes. They were like blackout fabric. But she didn't want that most of the time. She didn't want those down, right? But if she had them up, there was nothing, like no visual impediment from the outside into her apartment, and her apartment faced into the courtyard of everyone else's apartments.
Yeah.
Right? So she ended up buying these, like, white curtains that she put in front of the blackout ones so that she could have those drawn and still have some semblance of privacy without making no light come into her apartment.
Yeah.
Right. I assume that's kind of the use case of curtains. Well, those kinds of curtains. But I think there's other reasons to have curtains. Do you like curtains? Or do you just prefer to stick with whatever there is, if you had a choice?
So, like, do I like curtains? Yes. Would I prefer to have curtains? Yes. Do I have curtains? No.
Not enough to invest in them.
Yeah, not enough to go through the effort of, like, putting in curtains into an apartment.
Yeah.
Because, like, the other thing with, like, apartments is, like, to put in curtains, like, I kind of think in most cases you got to put holes in the wall. And
I will say Erin was able to command hook a curtain rod up.
Oh, yikes. That sounds like a
And it worked. Of all the command hook things in her apartment, I don't think those ever fell down.
Wow, that's impressive, actually.
Yeah.
Wait, have I told you about my stupid command hook?
I mean, we were talking about command hooks just the other week, but I don't think there's a specific thing that you talked about.
So, like, the only command hooks that I'll, like, I will buy, like, the Velcro picture hanging ones, but right, anything right. that's, like, a, just the, like, double sticky side to attach, like, a hanger or, like, a hook to the wall... I have so many poster strips that I refuse to buy any others and just make it work with like multiple poster strips and stuff. Cause like when I was an RA, like, I don't know, like whoever makes the command products, like gave Res Life a promotional like crate of them. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to like give them out to residents, but like, we gave like 3 packs out to every resident, and there were still like boxes and boxes of like these little like 4-pack trial packs of them. So like they're like, well, we're just gonna throw them away, and I was like, okay, like I'll literally take like 100 packs. Like I just like grabbed like as many packs as I could fit in my hands, and then like brought them back to my room and like put them away in storage. And I've been using them for years, ever since like I was a sophomore in college. I've been using them, and like I'm probably like 10% through my stash.
That's amazing.
Like,
are these command brand poster strips sort of thing? Okay.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if that's what you're talking about. Okay. Huh. Well, that's nice. We've actually had to buy them sometimes.
Oh, geez. I should just mail you some because, like, I am. Yeah, poster hanger strips. And so, like, but they're little, and so that's the issue is, like, heavy things, it's a real pain in the keister to get them up.
Yep.
Properly with these puppies. And so, but it's just like, it's the, not the theory, it's the principle behind it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I already got freebies, so it's I feel like it's the most irrational principle. I got something for free, so like I have to use it or else I'm wasting money.
I mean, depending on the thing, that is sort of valid to say. I mean, I think that these do fall into that. Like, I'm not going to give you a hard time for using them at all, that's for sure. I think there are other things that one could be given for free. Like, if I kept every pen or pencil that I ever obtained for free and decided I'm going to use this instead of any other pen that I actually like, then I would be a very sad person. Like, I can do without 30 different ballpoint pens. And
crappy ballpoint pens.
Crappy ballpoint pens and crappy pencils with the worst erasers you've ever used.
Oh, gosh, that's the worst.
So, yeah.
A bad eraser is like having bad Wi-Fi. It's worse than, like, I'd rather have no eraser than a bad eraser. And just
let me know what I'm working with here.
Yeah.
don't give me false hope.
Don't bait me into making a mistake with the expectation that I can erase it when it turns out it just makes it worse.
I mean, that's kind of like, I remember the first time in fifth grade when I used erasable pens. And they worked way better than I would have ever imagined. Like, I wouldn't use them long term, of course, but even then they were actually pretty decent. And I've had this, I feel like I've told you about this, but I've had this erasable notebook. It's called the Everlast Notebook. And they have a few different versions of it. And they're supposed to only be used with a Pilot Friction pen, which is an erasable pen.
Yeah.
But the notebook is also specially designed to allow you not just to use the like eraser part of the friction pen, but to erase the entire notebook en masse. There's two versions. I think it was the original version, which I don't think is the version I have. I always forget. But there is a version where if you microwave the notebook, all of the ink disappears.
Yep, I have encountered one of these before.
Yes, I believe the version that I have is the kind that where it essentially works more like a whiteboard, where you just take like a damp paper towel and just wipe down a page and it'll disappear. But for those interested, the way that it works is there's only like probably like 20 sheets of paper in the whole thing. It's pretty thin, but each page has a QR code and you can like link it up with an app and it will like OCR the entire page and save what you've done as you go along. So like if you didn't want to commit to something like an iPad or something, but the notebook use case worked for you, like, you could just use one notebook for everything if you were willing to take the time to do the whole tech process. But I have literally never used this thing. I have had this notebook since junior year of college, and it's never been used, and I still have the pens sitting in their packaging.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I've never gotten around to, like, having a real need for them. Because I think around the time that I got them was also the first time that I got a tablet to, like, do handwriting on. And that ended up being enough for me. So maybe someday I'll have a use case for it. I've actually gotten back into handwriting a little bit. I decided this year that I wanted to get back into journaling for the first time seriously in a long time. And that's actually been very fun. And I have so many notebooks. I've always had so many notebooks, but now I have like a lot of notebooks and a lot of journal sized notebooks, not like school notebooks, like, you know, like A5-ish sized notebooks. And they're all just sitting there empty because a lot of them are pretty nice and I don't want to just waste them.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was like, look, the only way that I'm ever going to use these is if I start, like, journaling and doing more, like, handwriting seriously. But I just can't commit to doing that in one of these nice journals to start. So I took a random garbage moleskin that I bought for, like, taking notes during work. I currently have one right next to me that I just, when we're recording, sometimes I'll write something down if I want to talk about it, or I'll write random math notes or just anything. It's just, I just always have a sheet of paper next to me in case I happen to need it, right? And I had a pack of these. So I pulled one out, and I played around with different pens, and I finally started using this very nice rollerball pen that I got during my internship in San Diego. Like, I went to a fancy store in La Jolla in San Diego, and it was a fancy bookstore, but they also had fancy pens. And I bought this, like, $30 metal rollerball pen, and it's awesome. And I'm using it on this Moleskine paper, and it feels so nice to write. And then within 30 seconds, the ink, like, is bleeding through and feathering and stuff. Like, it's still legible, but it just looks way worse 30 seconds after I actually write the words. And so now I'm, like, super pumped for when I burn through this journal. Like, it's encouraging me to write a lot because I want to be done with this stupid thing. Like, I'm not going to move to another one until I've established this habit. Because, again, I don't want to waste one of my nicer ones.
Yeah.
But if I get through this journal, which is like 40 pages, then it's like, cool, I've definitely hit this habit if I'm able to do this in a timely fashion. And then it's like, cool, goodbye, crappy notebook paper. Hello, very good notebook paper, hopefully. So, but that still leaves this Everlast notebook in limbo with me, so.
I found it funny when you mentioned the size of the notebooks. Mm-hmm. And their intended purpose related to their size.
What do you mean?
Because my use case for different sizes of notebooks is exactly the opposite of what you described.
Oh, do you use small ones for more school-oriented things?
Yeah, so the only time these days that I use, like, A4 letter-sized notebooks is for journaling or something like that.
Interesting.
And I've switched completely to, or like when I have taken notes by hand, I've switched, like, and I made this change by the end of undergrad. So for like the last year and a half undergrad, all of my like note taking notebooks were all A5.
Wild. What is your reasoning for that?
A part of it was, I'm trying to think back to when I did the change. Part of it was cost, certainly. Because it was also when I was upgrading my, like, note-taking to, like, I'm actually going to take notes on decent paper.
Oh, okay. So you're getting, like, maybe not, like, Rodia notebooks, but, like...
No, they were, yeah.
Oh, they were Rodia. Okay, so yeah. There you go. Big money, big money.
And so, or at least for classes that, like, I thought the notes maybe looked at ever again, you know? So, like, my major classes and stuff like that. And so it was partially for cost and also like for efficiency, because like I would never fill up like a 48 page or a 50 page like A4 notebook in one for like one class. Then you're left with like this half used, like vaguely expensive notebook. And that just like makes me cringe. But I figured out that like an A5 notebook, throughout this course of like a semester, I end up using like at least a solid like 80-90% of it often. Yeah, I found that for classes at least, like.
So, but what about flipping to bigger notebooks for journaling? Like, why do you like that? That's interesting to me. Was that just because you had spare ones around and you were like, well, might as well use them? Or was there other reasoning to it?
I did have spare notebooks around, but I remember at the time I was contemplating between using like one of the extra like A5s for that purpose or just using a like US letter size or A4 or something.
Sure.
And I think what it like, so back when I first started, so a lot of it is just like the momentum of having done it and maintaining the system of like where I was doing it. But at the time when I did that, like my journaling wasn't short, it was like I need some time to just like chill with my thoughts and put some thoughts down and sort through them, and so like I'm gonna set aside like 30 plus minutes to doing this. And I am going to write frantically for that entire time, and so like I would like fill up pages and pages, and so it just like worked out.
That makes sense.
It felt like a satisfying, like a smaller notebook. I feel like I would have felt like I was turning the page too often. Versus like there, it felt like a satisfying amount of time. The other aspect is I was improving my cursive at the time as well. So some of my journaling was in cursive. And so like having a larger area, so my hand had less like falling off the page.
Yeah.
Like at the start of a line or something, you know?
That definitely makes sense.
And so.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I just like the way that I take notes, especially looking at how I took notes on my iPad at the end of college, and even knowing the notes that I took in like physics and math classes on paper for a few years, like A5 would have been way too small for the way that I took notes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a bit more, I don't know, all over the place. I like kind of having marginal side notes in my notes. For classes, I was like on my iPad. I did like a 2-column layout where the first column was maybe 25% of the page or so, mm-hmm. and the other column was, you know, the rest, and that was where the main notes went. But then I would add little side notes if I needed them. And mm-hmm. A5 would not be big enough for that. And then for journaling, again, I have a lot of these smaller ones around now because they're just convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But also. Like, I do write for a fair amount, like, you know, probably 15 to 30 minutes in that range when I've been trying to do this, because I've been trying to make it be a thing that I do, not just like, I did these three things today, ha ha ha, you know, and be done mm-hmm. with it. Like, I don't want that to happen, but I still don't write enough. Like, it is very satisfying to be like, I'm going to fill up this entire page or page and a half of this notebook, and it makes it feel like I did a lot in my journaling session. Versus if I had a huge letter notebook, I'd be like, wow, I didn't write that much.
mm-hmm.
So
I'm just noticing that. Oh, you. Okay. So I just noticed that I have had a few old notebooks handy, and okay. I'm rapidly remembering things that I have done in the past. And for a period of time, like I always, whenever I journal, I would like date it.
Yep.
But for a period of time, at least, I marked starting time and ending times.
Hmm. I write down the starting times, but I do not write down the ending times.
And Jesus, oh my God, what was I doing? I must have been going through some. I'm not even going to read what this is right now,
yeah.
But just based on the time, like, I'm noticing maybe 30 minutes plus is not a fair assessment of some of the journaling that I did.
Well, it sounds like it's true, but maybe not as precise or accurate as would be helpful.
Maybe it's misleading because I just ran across one that was like 2 hours straight.
That's impressive. My hand would cramp.
It was an hour, 5-minute break, a bit over another hour.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
I think I went to the bathroom, probably.
My limiting factor would definitely be my hand just not being used to journaling. I'm sure that'll get better over time, but like the first few times that I was at like the 15-minute mark, I was like, I just can't go on. Like,
yeah.
This is too much writing. I'm not used to this anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. Fountain pens, dude. Fountain pens. Superpower. It's a writing superpower.
I'm going to send you a link to one of the notebooks that I have waiting in the wings. I got two of these notebooks. I have one that I'm using as sort of like a like writing notebook in terms of like other writing type projects, but I'm thinking of using the other one that I have for like an actual journal.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy who designed this, like, I listened to his podcast, but he has a podcast called The Pen Addict, which is a weekly podcast that he's been doing with another guy for over 10 years about, like, the world of pens.
Yeah.
And so he's a big pen nerd, a big paper nerd, and so I know that this notebook is, like, money
for paper, anything.
Yeah. And, like, especially, I've never had a notebook that lays flat so well. That was a new thing to me.
Oh.
That's not spiral bound, but actually lays flat in a legitimate way, no matter where you mm-hmm. are. Like, that's just bonkers to me. So
yeah,
this is probably the next one.
Yeah, because like I don't even think I've never even had that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know,
I'm sure the Rodeo ones are good.
I was gonna say, I just pulled one off my shelf next to me. And like, if you open to the, so I always use staple bound ones for classes. And so like, if you open to the center staple, yeah, it lays flat really nice. But,
yeah, I mean, that's like the Moleskine one for me.
But like they actually, they, especially like a well-used one stays fairly, like it doesn't just close on its own at least.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose this Moleskine one actually is pretty good, and it, but it is, the other difference though is that this one is, how many pages is it? Like, yeah, 120 pages.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like, that one lays flat real nicely for how much paper is in there.
Yeah. That's another thing that I dislike. I don't like big notebooks. I actively dislike them. I
might not like this one for journaling because of that. Like, I might like the fact that this Moleskine, I can only do about 40 pages because I can only do one side because the ink bleeds through.
Yeah.
But I get that.
Because I have one. I remember when I was first getting into, like, good paper and stuff, I was in undergrad and I was trying to be very conscious about my money, you know? And so like, I remember calculating like price per page of different like notebooks and formats. And it was like the thing that pushed me over the edge. Instead of getting like a Rhodia dot pad or something, I got like this Clairefontaine spiral bound, like little, it's like an A5 notebook, but it's like 200 pages. And I still, to this day, I used it today, but it's just a mess. And it's turned into my, like, I keep this with me for random crap that I have to write down because, like, I don't know how else I'll use it because, like, I'm not going to use it for a class because I'm going to, like, need to put, like, 8 classes in it. And I don't like doing that. And just, like, it's just, like, it's turned into such a mess and I just dislike it. Like, I have notes from my sophomore year of college in there. Like, that's, I have awesome organic chemistry notes in there, and I don't like it. Because, like, now I'm just carrying around organic chemistry notes for no reason.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably didn't really reuse notebooks, even if there was space. Like, at least not across subjects. And once I was done with a subject, then
yeah,
that notebook was, you know, off to the archives.
Yeah, I don't like doing that either. But, like, this one, at the time where I purchased it, and, like, just the extreme size of it, it was like, okay, this is... Yep. I need to keep using this.
Yep.
It's also, frick, what's the crisscross? Oh my gosh, graph paper.
Graph paper.
It's graph lined. Yeah. It's like, it's not the play.
Yep. I agree.
But
yeah, we were unpacking some stuff from under our bed and Aaron, and we came across, or I think I was trying to put things back under the bed after we got back from Minnesota. And one of Aaron's backpacks was around and I looked in it and there was one of the huge 5-star brand notebooks that are like, you know, are huge. It was completely empty. And I'm like, well,
yep,
this is never going to get used now.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair.
All right. We should move on.
Oh, no, we should move on. But I wanted to... No, let's move on. Let's move on.
Grant has brought Kathy Classics by Kathy Geiswhite. And we have a couple, a man and woman walking in from perhaps their garage door, perhaps from just their front door. In this frame, the door looks very wide, which is kind of funny. They both are just kind of, they look disheveled, a bit out of sorts. They're both sort of, you know, there's tears falling from their eyes, but seems more like an exasperation. And the woman cries out, "I'm exhausted." And the man says, "I'm beat." And in the next frame, as they continue on through the house, there are two pets behind them looking slightly concerned. They continue on, hands to their faces, trading off, starting with the woman. "My day was a disaster. Mine was a nightmare. I failed at everything. I was an idiot." And then they are now sitting on the couch. Still, the exasperation tears are on them. Their feet are up on their coffee table. They continue, "I was a fool. I was worse. No, I was worse. No, I was worse." And one of the pets, a dog, is thinking to himself, "They've quit competing to be, quote, pack leader and are trying for, quote, pack loser. And the dog is thinking this as the couple are both pointing at each other, saying in unison, "I can't cope. You fix dinner." Wowzers. Rough day. Rough day at the office.
Yeah, rough day. Before we get into this comic, I just want to revel at the maybe coincidence of, I'm just looking at my page on Go Comics right now, mm-hmm. and my left side ad that I have is for like the pen and paper company that I have like always bought most of my things from, and I just thought that was entertaining given our conversation from the past 20 minutes.
Yep. They know.
Yeah, they always know. They know because I visited last week.
There you go.
Window shopping. Then turns out everything I wanted was sold out. but so what I brought this comic for, it's talking about things that are a disaster, nightmare, things that just feel like the worst and how people cope with them. My thinking about this has stemmed from an incident that happened in my life about within the past week that was very difficult for me, we'll say. And we're going to go story time here, and it's going to be not useful story that doesn't add to the podcast, but we're going to do it anyway because I want to talk about it.
I'm ready.
I haven't told anyone, and I, like, when it happened, I almost called people. Oh. But I was like, so, because, like, okay, we'll just go through the story. So, as we've communicated about here previously, I like woodworking. I do woodworking. And the project that I've been working on most recently is I'm building a coffee table. I'm getting pretty close. I've, like, gotten through the steps of just, like, making pieces. And, like, I'm at the stages where I'm putting things together. And I'm almost done putting pieces together. So, like, I'm kind of getting things ready to be looking forward to, like, finishing, like, putting finish on items. You know, mm-hmm. like, staining them or whatever I decide to end up doing with it. And so I was thinking, like, in a coffee table, you've got the tabletop and you've got the leg assembly. And I was thinking it would be easiest if I, in terms of however I decide to finish it, is, or it might be easier to access all portions of, like, the leg assembly if I stain the legs and the tabletop separately and then I just assemble them together, because the way that I'm attaching them is really quick and simple.
Okay.
And so I'm preparing those two things separately. I guess this isn't really, it's a grand story. It's not that important. But so I was finishing this tabletop that I had been making. And so I've got it. I had it all of the like major like shaping and cutting and everything was done. It was in the dimensions and style that I wanted. And the last step before finishing it was just to kind of like treat it in a way to give the final surface a surface that was ready for the finish. So like people will like sand or whatever. I don't sand because I hate sanding. But so like during this final finish, like this step of prepping the surface, like you got to go over kind of all sides of it to prep all the sides, and you want to do it strategically so that like kind of as you're doing each side, it's done in a way so you don't damage a side you've already done while doing the next one. Because say if you like clean up the top of it and then flip it over and clean up the bottom of it, you might damage the top while you're doing the bottom, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
But the top's more...
I'm getting a sense of foreshadowing here.
The top's more important, so you do that one last, I guess, is the important part.
Sure.
Because it's the most obvious surface.
Yeah.
And so I was going through, I kind of cleaned up all the bottom, all the sides, all the edges. I went and I started cleaning up the top.
Mm-hmm.
And in the method that I was using to clean up this surface, it required a fair amount of force and stuff. And I was admittedly probably about 90% of the way through finishing the top. I had like 2 more minutes of work until I was going to be like ready to bring the top inside, let it warm up, and then I was going to put the finish on it the next day.
Uh-huh.
And so I go and kind of take one more pass at it. And the way I was holding it down on my bench slipped loose. The top goes flying across my garage. And it doesn't just smack down on the floor. You know how if you like spin a quarter and it starts like, it spins around, but then like as it's like getting about to fall flat, it starts to go like whoosh, 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 like yeah, as yeah. it's like twirl. Yeah. So the square tabletop did that and literally hit all four corners multiple times. Mm. Well, I guess it didn't hit the same corners multiple times because it chipped off all four corners the first time and then just damaged it more the next times that it went around.
Oh, man.
Literally like two or just like a few minutes away from being done with it.
Yeah.
So that's one of those moments where you're like, what do I do here?
Uh-huh.
Like, I was so close. And like, I just wanted to cry. I just I didn't know what else to do. And so I kind of sat down, admittedly, on the concrete floor of my garage when it was like 15 degrees outside.
Uh-huh.
And I just like had to sit there for a solid like 60 seconds, just like take a few deep breaths.
For sure.
Before even going and assessing the damage. Because just like, I know this is bad. I need to mentally prepare myself here.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like in that situation, I did all right. I took a minute. I mentally prepared myself for what was going to come. And I walked over, assessed the damage. And I like to think that I did a very good job of being honest with myself about the assessment of the damage. And I had put myself in a headspace where I could think critically to solve the problems in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have, like, it's not done yet, but I think I've done a good job of, like, fixing the issues. And I think that comes a lot from being in the proper headspace to do that. So I'm happy with how I address this issue, but I guess, now getting back to actually you, and not just monologuing here, is what do you think, or, like, are there things that you like to do or would like to do when you encounter situations that are just like a immediate disaster, like a soul crushing disaster? Not to be dramatic or anything, but
I mean, I think at this point I'm pretty good at the taking a deep breath and not like dissociating myself, but like removing myself from the situation for an amount of time that is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is different, right? There's a distinction here between something that is very frustrating versus something that's like a panicked emergency.
That's a good point, yes.
Right? So I'm not talking about situations where like someone is on the verge of death or something like that and I need to do something, because I've frankly never been in that situation. I have no idea how I would handle a legitimate like medical emergency or something similar, right?
Yeah, like a time is of the essence disaster.
Yeah, that's not something I'm familiar with. I'm not sure I'd do well in that situation unless I somehow had a lot of training, like, or a lot of knowledge about it.
Yeah.
But like in your case, if we're talking, you know, it's something where you were doing something within your skill set and you do have the ability to assess what was going on and figure it out. As opposed to, let's consider, I was trying to build something with wood. It would have been probably my first time ever doing it. And if I screw something up, I don't really know what to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even in that situation, if I'm, let's say I'm doing something new and I screw something up, depending on different factors, part of my mindset could be, well, that's a first time sort of thing, you know. I guess I'll get better, hopefully. But I don't know. I've always been a big fan. Well, not necessarily always, but the last several years, I think I've gotten good at the like, look, I'm not gonna be effective in this situation in my current state, and I know that. Like, I think I can tell very quickly I mean, not always, you know, like a common thing with Aaron and I is like one of us will get in a mood and you just kind of get stubborn for no good reason.
Mm.
And we both, I think, have a hard time recognizing that in ourselves and each other in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing that, you know, like I can definitely work on. It's like being like, why am I being an asshole right now? Like, what's the point of this? Right? Like, why am I just being annoying? This is not beneficial at all. So that's something where like, but the approach in my mind is always still like, recognize the thing that's going on and then just be, and either if you're in control enough, try and flip a switch sort of a thing and be like, look, I just need to adjust my mindset right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a bigger issue and you can't, and you feel like you just can't do that right now, there's just too much in this situation, then it has to be the like, look, I just have to go process this in a better way. Mm-hmm. And wait until I am able to handle this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ideally, if it doesn't involve people, that's really easy to do because the situation is just going to sit there waiting for you.
Yeah.
If it's just you and the thing and there's nobody else involved and it's not like time sensitive or whatever, then it's just like, well, that's just what I'm going to do. I'll get back to that. And that's typically my approach. And that's why no one really ever sees me angry.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Seems like an effective way to approach problems. We, from Mark, we got Nick and Zuzu by Nick Galifianakis. Wait, is that...
I assume they're related. I have no clue.
Okay. I was just like, is this one of those times where a name is just like close enough to a name that I think it is that I just say... Like, I just ignore the obvious difference in letters in the middle or something, you know?
No, I believe it's the same.
Okay, sweet. So we got, we have three characters here standing in a generic room of the house, possibly like a, I don't know, like maybe a dining room or something? I don't freaking know. That's irrelevant, though. But it looks like two young adult age women... two young adult age daughters looking at their mother. Nobody seems too happy here. The mother seems somewhat sad or melancholy, and the daughters are looking at her in a somewhat, we'll go with a disappointed or disapproving way. And they are together saying, I can't believe you kept this from us our whole lives. That's decades worth of leverage we never got to use. Or wait, maybe it's the other way around. Is it the mom saying that? Or is it the daughters?
It's the daughters. Okay. I think you were underestimating their age.
Oh, are they older?
Like I look at them and I'm like, they're definitely like in their late 20s, early to mid 30s even. But that's neither here nor there.
Young adult. What? Late 20s is not young adult?
I suppose not in the colloquial sense, but whatever.
Really? Oh,
no, of course not.
Okay. I guess I keep messing up with people's ages because I feel like I'm getting old for the place I am at in life.
Okay, so we're doing another grant thing today.
Oh, no.
So, right?
Leverage. We're talking about levers.
Yep, you basically got it. I want it. What's your favorite... What's your favorite simple machine, Grant?
Was that actually where you were going, or did I just...
No, like, actually, leverage was what I was going to focus on, and specifically talk about how simple machines are basically all about leverage in somewhat in one way or another.
Oh, I can't believe I got that right.
I'm just too predictable. I need to make it weirder next time.
No, you're not. I think I'm just, like, too stupid.
Anyway, what's your favorite simple machine?
Simple machine. Okay. It's not a screw, first of all. It is not a screw.
A screw.
Aren't they?
Uh-oh.
I thought they were a simple machine.
What's the traditional list of simple machines? I mean, I believe you. Let's see. What does Wikipedia have to say? Oh, yeah, you're right. Huh. How did I not know that? Okay, the classically Renaissance-defined simple machines are levers, wheel and axle, pulley, inclined plane, wedge, and screw.
Yeah, it's definitely not a screw, first of all.
Okay. Not even like a water screw?
Yeah, that's cool, but screws are dumb, so screw that.
Okay.
Okay, no, screws are super useful. They're great, but like also screws.
Okay.
I was unaware that wedge and inclined plane were like
different.
Yeah. I thought it was just more of like a different application of the same thing. Well, I guess that's what most simple machines are, kind of. Like a screw is just an inclined plane wrapped around an axis, a helical axle.
There you go.
Or wrapped helically around it. I don't know. Anyway, I don't think it's wedged or inclined plane. Like pulleys are pretty cool.
Yeah.
And like I'm not like wheel. Yeah, wheel and axle are also cool, but I feel like wheel and axle get bumped down just because I don't have a better reason. And I gotta make decisions.
They don't fascinate people. Like, a wheel and axle is not a fascinating machine. Like, you don't go to a physics course to learn about how a wheel and axle work. But, like, pulleys are...
Yeah.
Infinitely fascinating.
Yeah. I... Like, part of me wants to say lever.
Okay.
But I think I'm going with pulley.
That's fair. That's a respectable choice.
I've got some dark memories of levers in my life. So I think we're going with pulley. Yeah. I had some summer tasks related to landscaping from my parents, as growing up, which involved me attempting to like dig bushes out of the ground that were planted in like rock.
So
like digging down as much to get into like the roots and then just like trying to lever the plant out the best I could.
Homegrown landscaping is the best.
Yeah.
My dad had us make a fire pit in our old playground area, and we dug into it to discover, A, that underneath the, like, pebbles of the playground area was just, like, the black fabric-y stuff.
Yeah.
And underneath that, it very rapid, because we lived, like, the middle of our neighborhood was a swamp, so it very rapidly flooded. He made us dig it way too wide. Like, it was probably, like, over 3 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
and like 6 inches deep or whatever. And then he was like, hey, take all these rocks that are part of our other bits of landscaping and we're gonna use those as our fire ring. We're like, all right, Dad.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Dad.
A lot of good planning went into that one.
Yeah.
But we used the fire pit, so it was fine.
That's good at least.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Pulley. Yeah.
All right.
You got thoughts?
I mean, my initial thought was definitely pulley. They're just way cooler and more fun to work with. Like, I would have to, like, I feel like I want to go to a science museum again and see the, like, novel applications of some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a water screw is super cool. And
yeah,
just
that's
for that,
a
screw is
idea.
Worth consideration, but ultimately I'll probably stick with pulley as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Ethereal fluid? What is this? Wait, what? What is history? Leonardo da Vinci, unpublished document, or based on pre-Newtonian science, such as believing...
No, it's about everything being the ether.
Oh, friction. Okay, yeah. That's, yeah. I thought it was just like a cool word to describe fluids.
No. Bunch of old people being dumb. Ha!
Yeah, idiots who didn't know modern science back like 500 years ago. How they not freaking know that, dummies?